All right, we're going to do a crossover episode on the Locked On Podcast Network today. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. I'm a co-host of Locked On Bulls. I've got with me Brad Rowland, who writes for Fansided and where else do you write? A million places.
Peachtree Hoops, Up Rocks, all sorts of places. Always fun.
More importantly, the co-host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, recording this in the media section at Phillips Arena as they're taking down the court and taking down the stuff. The Hawks just beat the Bulls 115-107, and this was an interesting game. This was a game that kind of the Hawks got out big early. The Bulls kind of came back in the second and third quarters, and then the Hawks pulled away at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first half was certainly entertaining from an offensive standpoint for both teams, but the Hawks were unconscious in the first half and kind of quietly bad defensively, which was kind of strange because I think it's normally the opposite for the Hawks. But in the last couple games, the Hawks have been an offense first team, but especially before halftime, it was an offensive bonanza, and then it kind of quieted down, and the Bulls kind of made their run late to make it more interesting than it probably should have been, I would say.
And the thing you have to keep in mind, too, is that the Hawks were on a back-to-back. They've had a pretty close game against the Cavs last night. They gave Cleveland their first loss of the season. So guys might have been out of gas a little bit. And this Bulls defense is just, it's not good. It hasn't been good except for a couple of games. It's just, tonight was just every single thing that was wrong with it. Rondo was just the effort was not there from him. The bench was awful. Basically every player on the Bulls except for Wade and Jimmy was just brutal tonight.
Yeah, and it was, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly on Rondo. This was not the best Dennis Schroeder game because he was kind of out of control, especially in the second half. But when he was playing well early on, especially, he was kind of able to get wherever he wanted to get against Rondo for the second straight night, really, because Schroeder kind of did the same thing against Kyrie last night for the Hawks. But, coming into the game, I was probably more optimistic about the Hawks' offense in this game than I normally would be because of the defense stuff that you mentioned from Chicago, just kind of not buying into the Bulls defensively. And we saw that. Especially early on, the Hawks really took whatever shots they want. I mean, they probably made them at a higher rate than they would normally make them, you know, higher than
their
baseline.
What did Tabo make his first seven shots of the night?
I think it was first seven or eight of the night. It was
it was sort of like, you know, what each half it was Tabo in the first half, and it was Tim Hardaway Jr. in the second half that just got unconscious.
Yeah, and the Hawks, it's happened a couple times for this Hawks team lately where especially Cephalosha has kind of been out of his mind offensively, and he's a defense-first guy, but, you know, he finished 8 of 9 tonight, 2 of 3 from 3, and that's obviously unsustainable, but most of his looks were good. It wasn't as if they were all contested. He was knocking down crazy shots. It's just that the Hawks converted on a higher number of them than they probably would have, but that's definitely just not sort of pass the buck on Chicago's defense because it was certainly not very good this game.
The rebounding margin is another thing that was just appalling in this game. I mean, the Bulls, you know, have been one of the better rebounding teams in the league so far this year. That's been one advantage that they've had over teams. Tonight, the Hawks won the rebounding battle 49-30, which, and I think in the first half they had 8 rebounds, the Bulls did, as a team, which is not maybe what you want.
Yeah, it was like 18-4 at one point.
It was brutal.
And the Hawks rebounded 36% of their own misses, which is the craziest thing because
the Hawks weren't missing a lot of shots in the first half.
Right, and when they did miss, they got all of their rebounds. So, you know, the Hawks, I'm kind of not used to the Hawks being a good rebounding team because they haven't been for so long, but with Howard, they've been much better this year, but they were basically just dominated the glass, and some of that was Howard, but it was really, you know, gang rebounding too. Paul Millsap had a double-double in this game. Dennis Schroeder had 7 rebounds, which shouldn't happen. So yeah, that was a big factor in this game, was that the Hawks, even when they did miss, got just second and third opportunities, and they really were able to convert those a lot.
How was Dwight fit in so far? He had a good night tonight, but you've obviously watched him more than I have. I was a fan of that signing when it happened. I know a lot of people were kind of down on it, especially after they lost Al Horford, but I figured the Hawks, I think, were 27th in the league in rebounding last year, and that's the one thing that Dwight can still do at an elite level. So I always thought that was kind of a good fit. So, I mean, what have you thought about, you know, the way he's looked so far this season?
He's played well, I think better than I thought. I did not love that move, to be honest with you, and my listeners are probably laughing as they listen to this. But that's the one thing that we kind of knew that Howard would be able to do, is rebound the ball at a high level. That's the one thing that's not, you know, really in question with Dwight, is that he's still an elite rebounder. He's had that on full display, and I think he's fit in better offensively than I thought. The pick-and-roll stuff has been nice with Schroeder when it has it going, and the high-low passing from Millsap to Howard has worked out very well. There was one ATO in this game where it ended up with a Millsap to Howard lob out of a timeout that was just beautiful, and Howard's kind of fit in. He's saying all the right things. He's, you know, the occasional post up that I don't love from Dwight, right, because he's not very good at that, but they're doing it just enough, I think, to keep him happy to where I'm trying not to freak out every time I see one, and knowing that it's bad offense. But he's doing all the right things. He's rebounding, he's protecting the rim, and they've been able to succeed better on offense than I thought, because that was really my concern, was that he would kill their spacing offensively. And it, you know, it hurts the spacing, but having a real live dive man to the rim and pick and roll is really nice, and we saw some of that tonight too.
Yeah, I would say so. And I said at the time, I obviously Al Horford is a better player than Dwight Howard, but I always kind of thought Howard maybe fit better next to Paul Millsap, because like they seemed like Millsap and Horford were a little bit redundant at times. But you mentioned something about out of timeout plays. The Bulls were not running good ATO plays. No. They were just not running good offense in general. When Dwayne Wade or Jimmy Butler were not making shots, it was just brutal. Like there was one possession late where Bobby Portis like held the ball, tried to pass it, did not know where he was going to pass it to, kicked it out to Rondo for a corner three attempt, which is never what you want. You never want Rondo to be shooting threes at all. I know he shot 36% last year in Sacramento, but thus far this season that has not been sustainable whatsoever. He shot 2 for 10 from the field tonight. He's generally been awful the last week or so.
Yeah, I saw you tweet something similar to that, where you know the offense should never be creating Rondo 3 on purpose, essentially.
No.
there was a couple times in this game where it felt like it actually was. And you mentioned Portis as well. I'm a big Bobby Portis fan, but he was awful.
He was brutal
in this game.
And Fred left him in way too long.
He kept playing him in the fourth. And as someone who wanted the Hawks to do well, that was something that I was happy about. But I couldn't really figure out for the life of me why they were doing that. And that's from someone who likes Portis' game quite a bit. This was not Bobby's game.
It really wasn't, and it was just mind-boggling at times that Fred would just leave him in, like, at some of these points where, you know, it looked like Taj was going to go into the game, and then you'd think, oh, great, Taj is finally going to come in for Bobby, and then he'd come in for Robin Lopez instead, and you're leaving Portis out there. Fred left him out there for, like, 6 or 7 minutes straight, and he wasn't doing anything, and, like, we tried, after the game, we tried to ask Fred what he saw out of Bobby tonight that made him leave him in. And he said basically, well, whatever, you know what you're going to get out of Bobby, which is that he plays hard. And it's like, yeah, he does play hard, but he was not making good basketball plays tonight. He looked like he just had no idea what to do out there.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's a typical coach answer, but
it's when you it's like the faintest of praise when you can't say something good about like something specific that a player did. Well, he does try hard.
He does,
and Bobby does try hard. Like that may be like a backhanded compliment from Fred, but that is one thing that Bobby always does.
That's one of the reasons I like him so much. But yeah, this is, I wish for his sake he would have had a quicker hook in this game, because he was a guy that kind of and I think the plus minus numbers kind of tell a story there as well. I think he was minus 9, 14 minutes, and that was almost, it almost felt worse than that, given how bad and kind of how useless he was in this game.
Absolutely. Now, the rest of the Bulls bench was just not really getting it done tonight. Jimmy Butler, 39 points. Dwayne Wade, 25 points. Taj Gibson, 13 points. Everybody else was just not contributing at all on the offensive end. And it's a little bit of a problem. Dwayne Wade, he actually came back in. It seemed like at the you know, with 6 minutes left in the game, when it seemed like the game was still winnable, Jimmy came back in for him, and it seemed like maybe the hope was that Hoiberg could just rest Dwayne the rest of the night, because obviously they have the game in Miami tomorrow, which, since Wade is 34, he's come, you know, he didn't look great on their first back-to-back in Indiana. And then it's also, you know, that he wants to put on a show in Miami tomorrow, because that's his first game against the Heat in his career. But he ended up having to come back in because Rondo was just so bad down the stretch, and Isaiah Cannon was so bad down the stretch that he ended up playing 34 minutes. And I know Wade is probably going to be running on adrenaline tomorrow because it's the Miami game, and he's going to have all this stuff and he's going to be motivated for it. But just physically, when we saw what... how he looked in Indiana after the Knicks game, it might get ugly tomorrow.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised of the minutes. I guess it made sense because the Bulls kind of hung around just enough to keep him out on the court for longer than they probably wanted in the spot. And, you know, after the game, Mike Budenholzer talked about how he was pleased with the defense, which I kind of disagree with for the Hawks, but he kind of just went out of his way to praise Wade and Butler because they both were so good in this game. And that was another reason I'm sure that Hoiberg wanted to roll with Wade, is because he was effective enough and efficient enough offensively. And, you know, listen, it was, as you said, kind of a two-man game all night long offensively between Wade and Butler. Nobody else was very effective. I did want to mention, and I know you probably remember this as well, the Doug McDermott dunk is something we have to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. So that's actually been a little bit of a running joke this season, because Doug, in the game against Indiana, not the one they got blown out, in the second game of the season that they won, Doug had a almost poster dunk over Paul George, and he missed the dunk. And afterwards in the lineup, I've talked about this on Locked On Bulls before, but afterwards in the locker room, Doug was showing me he didn't have a scar, like a cut on his hand, on his wrist,
rim,
he had like a mark from the rim. And then the next game in Brooklyn, he had another wide open dunk that he just blew. And then I was kind of, you know, messing with him afterwards in the locker room about it, and he was just like, I'll get one of these times. And then, like, so then this one happens tonight. It wasn't over anybody, really, but
he went hard,
was a pretty thunderous dunk. And so I saw him in the locker room afterwards, and I was just like, hey, you got one finally. And he's like, hey, yeah, you saw the vine. I broke the camera. So
there was a lot of Hawks fans that were kind of surprised. I didn't think they expected the hashtag sneakily athletic.
Doug is one of the most sneaky athletic, hashtag sneaky athletic guys in the league. He's the classic guy that you look at and think, oh, he's just, you know, another, you know, white shooter, whatever, like the stereotype. But Doug is an athletic guy. He's had dunks like this before in previous years, and he was a pretty athletic guy in college. His measurements at the combine were crazy. Like, he's a pretty athletic guy. It's just kind of, you know, because of what he looks like and what the stereotype is, you don't really expect it when it happens.
Yeah, you can kind of tell in the arena, the crowd was
like, what's going on?
Combination of shock and being impressed by what McDermott did there. So I know we had to bring that up. If nothing else, it was probably, you know, as good as Butler and Wade were this game, that was probably the highlight of the night for the Bulls, which is the McDermott dunk. So I enjoyed that. I wanted to point that out for the Bulls fans who are probably not terribly pleased with this performance. At least you have that to hold on to.
We should point out also that Dwayne Wade hit 2 3-pointers tonight. He was 2 for 5 on the night. He's now, I believe, 12 for 28 on the season.
Which is just out of control. I mean, and listen, as a team, the Bulls were 7 of 12 in the first half and kind of cratered after that. But Wade himself, you know, keeps knocking down. And he looked good in the ones that he took, at least the ones that were open.
Right.
I think it looks like he's supposed to be able to make that shot. And while, you know, I'm sure you guys know and talk about all the time that, you know, he just didn't do this before. I'm an outsider on this one, but it looks like he's supposed to be taking that shot.
Well, here's the thing. I will say, after practice every day, we go into the gym after, when they call us in for practice, and he is always working on that shot with Fred Hoiberg. Like apparently when he got to Chicago in August, Fred went in with him and broke down like stuff about his shooting form and tried to get him to change it, because before he was shooting 3-pointers the same way that he was shooting fadeaways with his mechanics, and that's why it wasn't happening. So Fred is actually, seems like he's gotten him to actually change some stuff about his shooting form, and that's what's made him more effective. I'm still skeptical that it's going to be sustainable, just because he has been a terrible 3-point shooter for 13 seasons. I don't want to suddenly believe that he has gotten to be a good 3-point shooter just overnight. But I mean, this is not unprecedented. Jason Kidd was a terrible shooter early on in his career, and then he became a really good shooter later on when, you know, once the athleticism kind of went away for him, he was like, okay, if I want to stay in the league and stay effective, I've got to do something. That's kind of why Allen Iverson fell off as hard as he did towards the end of his career, because once the athleticism went, he never learned how to shoot, so he didn't really have anything else to fall back on. I think Wade is, at this point in his career, smart enough to realize, okay, I'm not going to be able to just explode over. He can still do that at times, but he's not going to be able to do that all the time forever. And if he wants to stay in the league and, you know, and stay an elite player longer, he's got to evolve his game, and so far he's been doing that.
Yeah, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, you know, coming into the year, I was pretty low on Chicago for, you know, defense was really one of my bigger concerns, but especially
a lot of people were.
Yeah, I mean, the spacing offensively, though, if Wade is capable of, you know, being an above average 3-point shooter, that really helps the spacing, even if it's still, even with that, I think, you know, Chicago still has some spacing issues because of Rondo and some of the lineups that they're playing. But if Wade could actually sustain that, it really helps the offense. You know, the defense remains a concern, but if that would at least help in that slight regard, especially if they're, you know, intent on playing Rondo as much as he seems to be playing at this point.
Right, and I think Rondo is really the biggest liability on the team at this point, as the guys who are playing a lot. That, you know, the Rondo thing lasted about three games. The first three games of the season, it was like all the teammates were raving about, you know, how communicative he is and how he's, you know, getting guys into the sets and the ball's moving and it's just everything is going so smoothly. And then after about three games, he starts kind of going into, you know, checked out mode on defense, and then like he'll like do what he used to always do in Sacramento last year when he led the league in assists. But what he'll do is he'll just kind of hold the ball until he finds somebody who's open and he can like give them an assist so that he can get his numbers up. That's kind of the mode that he's in right now. And you see Jimmy kind of taking veiled shots. Like he'll say something like, you know, some guys on the team are just like gambling too much on defense. It's obvious who he's talking about.
Some guys, but no, it's definitely both ends, because as poorly as Schroeder played, I thought, for most of this game, Schroeder's not the greatest point guard in the world, and he kind of just did whatever he wanted to. And Rondo is, you know, it was definitely a visible lack of, you never want to just kill a guy's effort, but it did not seem as if he was particularly locked in on that end of the court. And if he's not good on defense, then, you know, all the offensive issues become magnified. And I think, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that Rondo has been good defensively for the last couple of years, because I know he hasn't been, but you can really see it if you just watch him off the ball. It's just visible to even a casual fan, I think, can tell how poor he is defensively when he's not locked in.
Well, it seems like he's a good defender because he goes for steals, and sometimes he'll get steals and it's a highlight play, but it's just the team just functions at this point so much better when he's not on the floor than when he's on the floor. Like, the team functions better when Isaiah Cannon is out there and you have Wade or Jimmy running the offense. And when you say a team functions better with Isaiah Cannon on the floor than you, that's not great.
No, it's definitely not great. I was going to ask you about Schroeder, since I just talked about him. What do you think about Schroeder as a long-term starting point guard in that contract, and kind of just, you know, I think you saw a below-average game from him tonight, but, you know, is that something that the Hawks, were you okay with that move? Do you think he's an actual starting point guard in the future, or was that more of a risk than you would have liked to have taken if you were the Hawks?
I think the contract is fine. I think
that's kind of where I am.
Considering what a lot of guys are getting on the open market, you know, what did he get, 70?
Yeah, it's 470, but it's actually 462 with performances edited.
That's fine if he's going to be your starting point guard, and it's certainly not a perfect solution. There are times, I mean, he makes some incredible plays sometimes, but also just his decision-making at times. You know, tonight his decision-making was not great. There are times where he's still clearly just, like, figuring out what to do. He still has a lot to do in terms of, like, polishing his game, but, you know, I'm fine with, like, it's not like they were gonna get, like, they weren't gonna re-sign Teague, so it's like they had, once they moved him and they decided Schroeder was the long-term play, you know, who else are they gonna get at point guard that's a better option?
Well, yeah, that was my point as well. And yeah, we saw, especially in the second half, there was about a 5-minute stretch where the decision making was just, you know, horrible, to be kind, even. It was deplorably bad, but
that's not a word you should probably be using right now.
Probably not the word to use, but alas. But yeah, no, it's Schroeder, I don't know. You mentioned the Teague thing. The Hawks, would you rather pay Schroeder, you know, who's much, much younger than Teague, this 4-for-62, 4-for-70 deal, or would you rather pay Teague what was going to be more money for, you know, non-peak years? And I think that's a pretty easy decision.
Teague's been a disaster in Indiana.
Yeah,
so far.
He was better tonight from what I saw. Obviously didn't watch the game as I was here, but aside from, even if you think he's just the guy he's been over the last couple of years, it's going to be, you'll be paying him into his 30s and probably paying him more than what Schroeder's making. That's not a tough decision.
It's really not. No, I absolutely agree. I would rather have Schroeder long term than Teague.
That's sort of been the big question. It's been that and Howard, but I think a lot of
Howard's worked out pretty well so far.
Yeah, I think he's been as good as they possibly could have thought and imagined. And even I will say that as someone who didn't like it, the fit's been good. I talked to Greg Anthony for something earlier this week, and he was really high on the fit between Howard and Millsap versus Horford and Millsap. And, you know, what you said at the top, I agree with that. Horford's the better player. I think a lot of people in Atlanta don't even really accept that, but I think that's fairly clear. But the
so
fit
many
stuff,
people don't realize how good of a player Al Horford is. It's insane.
I'm hoping people my listeners are going to be listening to you say that and know that it's not just me, and people nationally think the same thing that I do. But yeah, there is an argument, though, that the fit stuff does matter because, you know, Howard is very different from Horford. Horford and Millsap are similar in a lot of ways, and the fact that they had so much, a couple of glaring weaknesses, you know, rim protection I think was an overrated weakness because Horford's actually okay at that. He doesn't really block shots, but he's okay around the rim. But rebounding, man, like, that was the biggest thing. That's what a lot of Hawks fans focus on, and we saw that that can be fixed in certain ways. There are things you lose with Howard, but there's things you gain, and he has played very well. I'll say that again. I'm trying to be as positive as I can about that. He's played quite well. Some of my long-term concerns remain, but in terms of, you know, he's healthy and productive and dialed in right now, and you can see the results of that.
Absolutely. So I think that about wraps it up. Who do you guys play next?
Get 2 days off here, and then the Philadelphia 76ers arrive on Saturday. I'm hoping that
Embiid plays.
It's a back-to-back, so I'm hoping this is the one we get to see. If not...
Is it the second half of their back-to-back or the first half?
It's the second half.
You might not get to
see it. I know. I have the fear that we're going to be watching a no Simmons, no Embiid Sixers team on Saturday here in this building.
That is rough. I the other day I looked at the Bulls schedule and... Just to make sure, and both of the times the Sixers come through Chicago later this season are not on back-to-back, so I'm going to get to see Embiid twice.
Congratulations to you on that.
I'm so excited about that. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, the Hawks already play the Sixers on the road, and Embiid did play. So I did get to at least watch him play against the Hawks, but it's definitely different in person.
Right, no, I still haven't seen him play in person yet. I'm real excited about that. But so, you know, tell people where they can find your work. Just generally speaking, subscribe to the Locked On Hawks podcast. Leave a 5-star review.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Locked On Hawks, you know, each and every day talking about the Hawks. Also, my writing can be found, my Hawk stuff, largely at PeachTreeHoops.com, which is the SB Nation Hawks site. Also, some stuff on UpRocks and Dime, and some, you know, kind of all over the place on the internet, fan side of the Step Back. I kind of just dabble here and there, but Hawk stuff, especially PeachTreeHoops.com and Locked On Hawks podcast.
That's right. And what's your Twitter?
Oh, and my personal Twitter is at BT Roland. You can find the show at Locked On Hawks, but at BT Roland is my personal one. It's all sports, so come visit me.
Absolutely. No, Brad's a great follow for all things Hawks, all things, you know, NBA, football, anything. I'm at Hyken, HIGHKIN on Twitter. That's my handle. Check out Locked On Bulls on iTunes. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, anywhere that you can find podcasts. Follow the show at Locked On Bulls, and I will be back with you guys from Miami tomorrow after the Wade game, so take it easy.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.